change to the agenda. I've heard from a couple of delegations that they may have to leave earlier tomorrow. So tomorrow morning, I suggest we begin with the communique in order to allow people to get out if they need to. Korea, are we ready to go again?
Okay, it's time to discuss the book value method. The book value method focuses on the perspective of the ultimate controlling shareholder. It means that just like the ultimate parent entity, intermediate parent entities or subsidiaries have to transfer the assets and liabilities at book value in a UCC transition when accounting from the UCC perspective. From the perspective of the ultimate controlling shareholder, there is no economic substances among UCC entities, and thus it is argued that it is appropriate not to recognize any gain or loss from the transition, even if the parties to the transition are subsidiaries or intermediate parent companies. However, even though the book value method should be used, there exist many different alternatives as to which book value should be applied when the book value method is adopted. There are three alternatives. Alternative A, carrying amount in the consolidated financial statement of the ultimate controlling entity. Alternative B, carrying amount in the consolidated financial statement of the immediately superior controlling entity. Last but not least, alternative three, carryover basis of previous carrying amount. Under IFRS, there is no clear standard for this. However, the IFRS practice guideline of PwC interprets that where there is an intermediate parent company, the carrying amount in the consolidated financial statement of the ultimate controlling entity should be used for recognition of the assets and liabilities to be transferred in a BCUCC transition. So they support alternative A. In 2010, we had the CASB had surveyed the members of the IFASS and Big Four accounting firms with respect to which book value should be used in a UCC transition. Please look at the diagram on the left side. This simplified case illustrates a BCUCC. P1 and P2 are all listed company. P0 has a 51 ownership in P1 and P2. S1 and S2 are the wholly owned by P1, and S3 and S4 are by P2. In this fact pattern, P1 purchased the 100% ownership of S3 from P2. And now out of the cash, two very important questions arise. Sorry. The first question is, what accounting method should be most appropriate for this transaction? There are two options. One is book value and the other is fair value. Not exactly fair value, just the other than book value. Yeah. And the second question is, if the book value method is adopted, whose book value should be most appropriate? PGR's consolidated financial statement, P2's consolidated financial statement, or S3's individual financial statement? So, we received a total of six responses. If including Korea, there are six responses. At this point, I don't want to go through every individual response, but it was very interesting to find that there are diverse interpretations for the same questions. Like this. And we also worked major accounting firms. As you can see on the slide, it appears that they allow all the options available. Okay, let's move to summary of survey results. These are results. For the first question, the option that allows both methods is in the red, followed by the book value method. For the second question, the choice that permits all the options ranked the top, with the remaining options tied. It's very funny. As the result implies, responses vary. With this result, it is inferable that under the IFRS, any method can be opted for because no matter which method is taken, it has respected rationales. Additionally, in practice, major accounting firms seem to allow all options available. Consequently, the comparability of financial information will be severely damaged. Regarding the alternative accounting treatment for book value in UCC transaction, the following questions should be discussed. When accounting for a UCC transaction using book value method, which of the three alternatives do you think is appropriate? Okay, let's discuss.
Can you go back to the slide that shows us the three alternatives so that we all have them in front of us? Now, the question here is, if you were to support the book value method, here are three different numbers that could be described as book value. Open to comments.
I think there is another alternative. This is the book value of the consideration given by P1. You have, if P1 is buying the S3, the book value of the consideration given can be another book value.
So that would be the book value of the assets transferred on P1's financial statements. Okay.
This is alternative B.
We're talking of equity transaction, right? So
right.
How would the assets of the subsidiary get reflected in the parent's books?
How? Book value of the shares is...
Yeah, but that's only for consolidation.
in the book value, we are speaking about book values in the P1. Is the one...
Domenico, turn on your microphone, please.
If the P1 is transferring assets or net assets for a certain amount in his own books, is this the cost of the book value cost of the subsidiary acquired?
I think the... I think the situation is where P1 acquires
S3
by acquiring shares, right? It would be acquiring shares from P2, so S3 will become subsidiary of P1.
Yeah.
Let's get the diagram back up. I'm losing the plot here.
Okay. P1 transferred
cash or something.
Yes. Net assets.
P1
in exchange for shares of S3.
Correct. So there is a transaction between P1 and P2.
P2.
By which S3 will move to P1.
Yeah.
So S P one, yeah, so P one will say, let's assume 100%.
Yeah.
So P one will acquire 100% shares of S three from P two.
Yes.
So at that level there is only a transaction for purchasing shares, equity shares.
I think what the lady is saying is
not necessary.
There are two ways the transaction could occur. P one could transfer cash or other assets to P two in exchange for S3. Usually when there's a debit or a credit to cash, we get at least half the entry right. But if P1 transfers its shares to P2, then the quote on the book value of those shares is kind of meaningless because they're newly issued equity. And I think that's the point you're making, yeah.
But I think, Chair, if I may just refer back to Domingo's point. I think he's referring to the consideration that P transfers.
Yeah.
So whether or not P transfers cash or whatever, let's say it's 100, that you will then use that 100 as your as
book
the
value.
Cost, and you'll bring the assets in at the 100, whatever P paid. I think that's what Domingo is referring to.
Okay. Other comments? Yes.
What confuses me with these alternatives is that somehow we accept push-down accounting for alternative A and B, which I don't know, IFRS never like push-down accounting. So I would personally support the third option when we use the book values of the acquired company. However, at the same time, I believe that it really, for the purpose of the users, all these three alternatives are the same because they don't represent the fair value at the date of transaction. So if we go for the book value, we, in principle, may allow all the three options or choose and to make this as a UA accounting policy choice. Well, at the same time, what I say, I would prefer to keep on the last option.
Just as a point of order, the IFRSs are silent on push-down accounting. They don't take any opinion either way. Having said that, I did a survey a few months ago of national standard setters and could not find any jurisdiction that used push-down accounting unless the company was a U.S. registrant. So it's certainly not widely practiced outside of American companies or American listings. Other comments? I actually hadn't viewed A as a, I guess it is a kind of push-down accounting.
Yes, if you use that.
It's not exactly that though, because usually with push down, you're pushing down the amount that occurred in a transaction. So
on prior transaction.
A prior transaction. And this A would be kind of a halfway push down.
No, you know,
please.
Idésio from Brazil. You said IFRS silent. Normally, people tend not to use that, the push down. So, since the subsidiary is not allowed, but normally don't use the push down, if we agree that they could use alternative A, we are in fact changing the value of the assets and pushing the amount down to the books of subsidiaries. So it is, like I said, it is personal views. I like this all the time, view C, alternative C, that you keep the same cost base that you use to create that asset and liability. Does not matter if you have third parties or not, you carry on the same book value. After dosing of transaction, you keep the same value on that subsidiary.
Yeah.
Unless change the group.
I'm not understanding one thing. You have one asset value so much in the company. When you have alternative B, B carrying amount in the carrying amount in the consolidated financial statements of the immediately superior controlling entity, which is the difference in value of the asset. It will come back to the original value in the consolidated financial statement.
He's probably assuming that we have two different values in the ultimate parent company and the secondary
in the parent company. In the consolidated financial statements.
We are saying
consolidated financial assets. Only this, it's
at
not
that
the
level. They have multiple holding
okay.
companies.
Consolidated.
The same number of years in all levels.
Not
no, in alternative B, I'm responding for yours. So you, I understand that you are saying that we have two holding companies, for example, and you have one number for the subsidiary in the ultimate parent company and a different number in the second intermediate holding company. That also produce consolidated financial statement is the way I see that alternative.
It might be. Certainly, we would expect in a number of cases A and B would produce the same number, which I think is what Professor Martin is saying. But I can visualize differences: deferred taxes, share stock-based compensation. Things like that might give rise to different numbers between A and B. Yeah.
Or otherwise, just difference in timing.
Yeah.
I mean, there could have been the first acquisition 5 years ago and then another acquisition, and so. Yeah.
Okay, my sense of the table, and we don't vote on things here, but my sense of the table is that if we are in a book value world, most people would favor alternative C.
Yes.
Yeah, that's. Kim's going to weigh in and say, no, not me.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because I guess it goes back to, well, if we're going to use book values, well, what do these numbers mean? And does it necessarily make sense to use just C? So I don't know if I necessarily have a preference, because I don't quite know necessarily what the purpose is of using just the carryover basis and then to then define which one it is. So I don't know if I actually have a preference, to be honest. And that, I think, is probably evidenced by the general practice, you know, based on the survey, that particularly most of the large firms actually allow the choice, because to pick one of these.
Can I?
Yes.
It is not they allow, they accept.
They do accept, yes.
Yeah, they accept because there is no guidance, and you cannot say to a client, you cannot use that because there is no guidance. So including Ernst Young, where I am from, there is clear guidance that you can accept if there is economic substance on the transaction. But for the other side, it is very rare situation, they say, very rare situation that you can prove there is economic substance on a transaction under common control.
Yeah. But I think if we just go back to one of the previous questions where we were looking at, you know, should the accounting be reflective of the ultimate controlling entity or not, it was interesting that I thought generally the majority view was to say, yes, it's the accounting by the ultimate company, which is why I would have perhaps have expected most people to have gone for A. Whereas I know I expressed a view to say, well, no, I think it should be at that separate entity level. So I think, you know, if one goes back to that previous question, if we are saying, well, it should reflect the ultimate parent.
Yeah, it is a dialogue between us. Since in the subsidiary level you are not using the consolidated numbers for that subsidiary, looking to the subsidiary, why now that you made an under control transaction, you will be allowing that they use a different number. I think it's the same concept. You are not using the consolidated financial statement, the number of the parent company level. Why you move between one company to the other, you'll be allowing that.
Well, I guess it is because from the purchaser's perspective, do the historical book values in
there is no purchase. There is common control. They are just moving things between company to
49% of the shareholders of both those entities are not part of the control. So they have an interest in the financial
report. Yeah, but I understand. But if you want, when you have a different number at parent company level, this was created on a prior transaction, right? So the interest and the value that the new purchaser, the minority investor, has in that subsidiary and the value that he gave to the subsidiary has no meaning to the prior transaction, would be a totally different transaction. Why you'd be allowing to use the prior carrying amount of the parent? Makes no sense for me.
You're arguing for fair value.
Yes.
You forgot we are in a book value world.
You know, I'm arguing the fact that since you still have a controlling shareholder, you control most part of the transaction, and you keep assessing the subsidiary in the perspective of the continuous controlling shareholder.
Yet we still have the 49% that has an interest in this transaction. So
let's move on to the other if then question. This was an old technique we used to use when I was in competitive debate. Say, well, if to do that, and then you'd proceed to make a hash out of it. So shall we push on to the next one?
Okay. Now each of our fair value method, it also caused many debates, right? Fair value method focuses on the perspective of the stakeholders in the reporting entity. It means that subsidiaries, including intermediate parent companies, account for a UCC transaction from an independent reporting entity's perspective. Thus, the assets and liabilities transferred in the UCC transaction should be measured at fair value on the acquisition date. When there is any change made to the economic substance of the subsidiary due to the UCC transaction, it is viewed that it would be appropriate to recognize the UCC transaction as a general commercial transaction from the external stakeholder perspective. IFRS 3 is a standard of recovery to a business combination between independent third parties in a general market environment. Thus, some people insist that IFRS may be applied to BC-UCC transactions if the UCC transaction is accounted for at fair value from the independent reporting entity perspective. There should also be requirements for other types of UCC transactions, like spin-offs and investment in kind, to be accounted for at fair value, as if they are transactions with third parties. However, others maintain that when applying the acquisition method provided in IFRS 3 to BC-UCC transactions, regardless of the characteristic of UCC transaction, there arise doubts as to whether the goodwill generated from this transaction is de facto goodwill. Thus, they insist that even if fair value method is applied, an adjusted acquisition method in which the characteristics of UCC are reflected should be applied instead of fully applying IFRS 3 For example, perhaps remeasuring recognized assets and liabilities, but not recognized goodwill, intangible asset, or additional liabilities. Consequently, the three alternatives exist when fair value method is applied to UCC transactions, in particular, BC-UCC transactions. Alternative A, acquisition method, same with IFRS 3. Alternative B, adjusted acquisition method, for example, not recognized goodwill. Alternative C, other methods. So regarding the aforementioned fair value accounting for UCC transactions, the following questions should be discussed. When accounting for a BC-UCC transaction using fair value method, which of the alternatives do you think is appropriate? If neither of the alternatives are inappropriate, what other alternative do you suggest? Yes, okay, let's discuss.
We had a question similar to this. If you go back to the alternatives so that we're all clear, at the Interpretations Committee recently. And what we learned was that people who like something like Alternative B are dangerously close to cherry picking the parts of IFRS 3 that they like and don't like. The big parts that came up, they want to capitalize rather than expensing transaction costs. They don't want to recognize deferred taxes. They certainly don't want to recognize intangible assets, even though that may be the biggest part of the acquisition. Think what would happen if one of these entities was a drug company, a pharmaceutical company. Intangibles are going to be almost the whole balance sheet. But it really was deferred taxes, transaction costs, and intangibles. They weren't really very worried about goodwill, at least the people we were interacting with, but it was those three that they didn't like. So, comments. We are now assuming, as we did before, that we're in a fair value world, and the question is, do we go all in for IFRS 3? Do we somehow customize IFRS 3? And we would have to, the board would then have to debate how it would customize it. Or is there another alternative that we haven't thought about? So, comments? Avinash?
If we are using fair value, assuming that the economic substance of the transaction is that of acquisition, then it is appropriate to go for full fair value as per IFRS 3.
Okay. Others? Yes, Carol.
Based on the same reason which you described, I also support alternative A. As in a situation with the intangible assets not recognized, we are in danger of non-determining the proper result of acquisition, I mean the goodwill, which I assume using alternative B, we need to recognize inequity rather than in P&L if it is negative goodwill, for example. So it would be fully misleading. So that is why the first alternative is more preferable.
Also view A, I think if we're going to go fair value, then it's proper fair value.
Same. Okay.
I favor alternative A also.
All right, that's a pretty solid. That's a pretty solid result. Before we move on to the next point, now that our Chinese friends are in the room, I suggested that tomorrow, because some delegations have to leave early, including you all, that we begin with the communique, so that we have that taken care of while we are all in the room. Do I see any objections to that? Yuchen, does that work for you? Chen Yu, does that work for you? Okay. All right, well, then that will be our first order of business tomorrow morning. Back to Korea.
Okay. Now the topic we need to discuss is accounting for UCC transaction in separate financial statement. First, the need for accounting guidelines in separate financial statement. Okay, let's see. According to the IFRS, consolidated financial statement are the primary financial statement, and separate financial statement optional supplementary statement used for reference. Therefore, IFRS does not provide specific accounting guidelines for separate financial statement in various situations. But in many countries, separate financial statements are just supplementary statement or prepared under local GAAP rather than IFRS. That's why some argue that it is inefficient to address detailed accounting guidelines for separate financial statement as the time and cost are limited. However, in some countries, including Korea, entities having subsidiaries subject to consolidation are required to file consolidated financial statement together with separate financial statement under the law. It means that separate financial statement are also integral part of the primary financial statement that must be prepared. Also, separate financial statements are used in determining distributable profit under the tax law or various regulatory ratio, because separate financial statements are viewed as statements prepared from a legal entity perspective. Consequently, it is extremely important that accounting for UCC transaction in separate financial statement is provided concretely, because it may significantly affect separate financial statement which are required to be prepared and important in practice. Thus, it is necessary to discuss the following question regarding the need to provide accounting guidelines for UCC transactions in separate financial statement. Question 3.5.1. In your jurisdiction, is preparation of separate financial statement a requirement under law or regulation? Question 4.2. In your jurisdiction, a separate financial statement prepared under IFRS or local GAAP? Question 4.3. Do you agree that guidance on accounting for UCC transaction in separate financial statement should be provided by including the issue in the UCC project? If not, what are your reasons?
Okay. I think we've already answered 5.1. And I think it was pretty much everybody in the room. Before moving to the others, a little background. Amaro and Ian can correct me if I'm wrong on recent developments. When we were dealing with separate financial statements back in 2003, our thinking was very much along the lines of 100% owned subsidiaries, even at the intermediate parent level. I don't recall at that time that we spent any significant time thinking of a situation in which you'd have a parent, two intermediate parents, and they're all public companies. That wasn't on our radar back then, and I don't know if it has been since. Amaro, have...
Since 2009 when I joined?
No, okay, well, Ian, I thought that would be the case. So we really, and it's, when you read the IFRSs, the words separate financial statements aren't even all that clear, whether we're thinking of separate as a parent only financial statements or as some other presentation. So that's a long way of saying my personal view is that this is all on the table. But I do think we've answered 5.1, so really the question then is 5.2, when you do prepare those locally, are they IFRS or are they local GAAP? Felipe?
Yes, we believe that the best is to prepare that in accordance with IFRS. However, some companies are facing some problems because the requirement of account for in the, at the subsidiary level applying the cost instead of equity. And then sometimes they have problems in declaring dividends. And one of the solutions has been to prepare a separate set of financial statements in accordance with local GAAP, because local GAAP requires to apply equity. And those are exceptions. We prefer to apply IFRS's. However, to solve the problem related to declaring dividends, we have decided to do so.
That would be very similar to the solution that, for the moment, Brazil has adopted of having that one carve out. Yeah. By the way, my understanding is that the board intends to address that problem. It will be the smallest amendment we have ever done, because it only takes four words. Or the equity method. Comments, reactions?
Just to answer that second question, in India, as of now, it's local GAAP.
Okay.
But as and when we move to IFRS converged accounts, which are, standards which are in the AS, still we'll have some companies adopting IFRS and some will adopt local GAAP, depending on the size, whether they are listed, yeah, unlisted, and so on. So we'll always have a combination.
Please.
The separate financial report may be target with each country's law and regulations. So the regulation regarding each whole legal entity may differ from one to other. That even can be related to the corporate law or other laws from these regional countries. And also in many countries, the separate financial statement is also something, some kind of amendment to the real one. Or could be according to the tax measurement of this country or other measurements. Or some statement, some regulation, accounting regulation from that country. So is that meaningful that we discuss this issue under the UCC treatment? So what we suggest is that we don't put this issue to our UCC main issues.
Obviously, we can't provide guidance on what you do if you're not following IFRS. That's kind of a limitation on us. But if you're following IFRS, then it would seem that the issue is germane. You want a set of financial statements that comply. You need to know what you're complying with. I've forgotten the order, so let's just go. Kim, Domingo, did you want to come in? And then Rosita.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, just to comment, in South Africa, yes, our separate financial statements need to be in compliance with IFRS. I actually think that we do need to address this as part of the project, again, going back to an earlier comments that I made, that the transaction might be affected by buying the net assets. So you could actually have an entity that doesn't have any other subsidiaries but has acquired a division from a fellow subsidiary, and they would need to account for that common control transaction. And again, I would also question whether or not we should have a different answer in that particular set of circumstances versus a situation where you've acquired the shares in the consolidated financial statements of that acquirer. So again, I think there needs to be some consistency coming through there.
Domingo?
We made a little change to IAS 27, so we are applying local GAAP because we use it to distribute dividends and for taxes, so we are applying local GAAP. Yes.
Rosita?
Yes. Indonesia has not adopted full IFRS, but our local GAAP has substantially converged with IFRS. And Indonesia, we are not required to prepare separate financial statement, but if you prepare a separate financial statement as the attachment of consolidated financial statement, you have to follow the same accounting standard, which is our local GAAP, which has substantially converged to IFRS. Therefore, I would suggest, because I think some countries also use IFRS as the basis for preparing the separate financial statement, this issue also needs to be addressed.
Other comments? Well, I think we've also answered, excuse me? You know, Felipe was on before, so I assume you don't have any. Okay, so my sense is that the...
Can I make a question?
Sure.
to the group? When required, the separate financial statement is required on a company-by-company base of the entire group. So if the group has 100 companies, would be 100 separate, okay, like in Brazil. Yeah.
Okay. Well, my sense of the group is that obviously if local law or local tax law or something like that controls what you do in the separate financial statements, then by definition, they're outside of our scope.
Right.
But if, for one reason or another, whether it's required or desired or whatever, an entity wants to assert compliance, my sense of the group is that we ought to help them. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that takes us to the second 5.1 on your slide. So are we ready to press on then? Please.
It's about accounting treatment for UCC transition in separate financial statement. Okay, according to the IAS 27, separate financial statements are based on a legal entity concept. Since separate financial statements focus on the performance of investment assets based on direct equity investment rather than on the reported performance and net assets. Therefore, significant influence or control should not be considered in individual transactions, which means that there is no need to consider whether the other party to the transaction is a subsidiary or associate. In other words, it would be appropriate to view transactions with subsidiaries and associates as independent transactions with third parties. I can explain in proper example to improve your understanding. For instance, when control is obtained by acquiring additional shares in an associate, this is viewed as a business combination achieved in stage, that is, a step acquisition. Right. in consolidated financial statement. And thus, the existing shares are remeasured at fair value, and the difference between the remeasured fair value and previous book value is recognized as gain or loss, according to paragraph 42 of IFRS 3. This is because in consolidated financial statement, acquisition of control is viewed as an event that significantly changes the substance of the investment and economic environment relating to the investment. However, because separate financial statements are prepared based on direct equity investment, IFRS 3 may not be applied to the step acquisition transaction in separate financial statement. The additional acquisition cost should merely be added to the previous book value of shares. Yet, the acquisition of control caused the category of investment to change from the existing investment in associate to investment in subsidiaries. According to paragraph BC7 in IS 27, each category of investment should be accounted for consistently. Therefore, if all investments in associate or subsidiaries were accounted for using the cost method or the fair value method, the change in category would not have any effect. Due to the definition and nature of the accounting for separate financial statement provided in IAS 27, the following conflicting views exist regarding the accounting for UCC transaction in separate financial statement. Let's look at the view A first. Because the acquirer may be determined and the transaction may be designed from the ultimate controlling shareholder perspective, UCC transactions are viewed as transaction with no economic substance and accounted for at book value even in separate financial statement. On the other hand, view B is that considering the characteristic of separate financial statement set out in IAS 27, that is, considering the separate financial statement focus on the performance of investment assets based on direct equity investment, UCC transactions should also be generally understood as transaction with third parties. Consequently, UCC transactions account for fair value. An in-depth discussion should be conducted through the UCC project to examine which of the two views is appropriate. In determining, however, the current views of the IFRS IC regarding UCC transaction in separate financial statement have been partially expressed via the agenda paper. The title is IAS 27, Consolidate and Separate Financial Statement, Group Reorganization in Separate Financial Statement. This paper reviewed at the meetings held in July and September in 2011. The paper was reviewed at the request of an external stakeholder who asked for interpretation regarding how to account for group reorganizations through share change in separate financial statement as UCC transaction. An external inquirer has presented the group reorganization to the IFRS IC and asked whether paragraph 13 and 14 in IAS 27 amended 2011 may be applied to the scenario by analogy. Let's look at the big figure. That's the request things. The request addressed group reorganizations in which the original parent with multiple subsidiaries established new intermediate parents between itself and several subsidiaries in a share-for-share exchange, often referred to as a one-to-many present subsidiary relationship, as you see the figure on the slide. In such reorganizations, a new intermediate parent typically acquires the original parent's interest in the subsidiaries in exchange for its own equity instruments. In other words, the new intermediate parent A, for example, acquires the original parent's shareholdings in subsidiary A and subsidiary D in exchange for the new equity instruments that it issues to the original parent as part of this reorganization. In determining the cost of the investment, different views exist as to whether the new parent may apply paragraph 38B of IAS 27 and measure cost at the carrying amount of each share of the equity items shown in the separate financial statement of the original parent at the date of the reorganization. They suggest three views, but two views, we just focus on two views. View one is measuring by fair value of consideration given. View two is measuring by previous carrying amount basis. But according to the step analysis and IFRS ICE decision, the general principle is that cost of an investment is measured by the fair value of consideration in separate financial statement. When a parent reorganizes the structure of each group under common control, except for certain cases that meet all requirements presented in paragraph 38B of IAS 27, amended to such and then A. It is currently replaced by paragraph 13B of IAS 27, amended in 2011. That is, even if the economic substance of the reorganization does not change from UCC perspective, the previous carrying amount basis may only be applied to those fulfilling the detailed conditions set out in paragraph 38B and 38C of IAS 27, and cannot be applied by an origin to those that do not meet the conditions. However, it is not clear whether the principle of measuring by fair value in the reorganization scenario shown in the IFRS ICE's interpretation may also be applied to other types of UCC transactions, such as business acquisition, merger, or spin-off. But this interpretation and intention of the IFRS ICE should be taken into account when developing accounting for UCC transaction in separate financial statement as part of the UCC project. So consequently, we should discuss and examine the following questions regarding the accounting method for UCC transaction in separate financial statement. From question 5.3 to 5.5. Okay.
Just as I said before, the term separate financial statements, and I just downloaded the most recent amendment to 27 to be sure. If we are talking about an intermediate parent that wishes to prepare its financial statements and assert compliance with IFRS, it must prepare consolidated financial statements. It may then also present what 27 refers to as a separate, or in my previous life, we would have referred to as a parent only. presentation. So what we're talking about in these questions is, correct me if I'm wrong, we're talking about an intermediate company. Well, are we talking about the ultimate parent or an intermediate? Okay, we're talking about an intermediate company that has already prepared consolidated financial statements, and now we're talking about what to do in its parent only or separate financial statements. Okay, let's go back to 5.1 then. Oh, no, no, excuse me. Well, I lost count. I'm sorry. 5.3. So, now the reason the Interpretations Committee voted the way it did was that it didn't have any choice. The language that this, if I remember this issue correctly, the language that the submission referred to is one where the board intentionally said, you may not analogize. And so the Interpretations Committee had no choice but to say the board meant what it said. The reason the board said that is because they recognized all of these other issues that we're talking about today, and they didn't want to create a precedent. So given all of that, 5.3, view A or view B? And let's go back to what view A and view B were, view one or view two. Okay? Comments? Does anybody have a strong, Carol, you wanted to come in? You were reaching for your button there.
Yeah. I believe that we maybe started to discuss this too early. You said not to generalize. However, we need to link this to the another project, which relates to separate financial statements. And if we allow here revaluation or remeasurement of certain assets and liabilities, then we should go back to the accounting for business combination as such, and to decide whether we need to follow the same model, because we cannot use different models for the different situation, although they're very similar. So, I would rather not to include this to the project until the more general issues resolved and discussed.
Okay, that's a fair point. Kim?
Thanks, Chair. Well, I think, I guess, like in this particular transaction, the item that the intermediate company has acquired would be an equity stake. And I suppose, and then I guess it would meet the definition of a subsidiary. And so the question, I suppose, would be, do you follow the current accounting, which says you account for it initially at cost, and cost would be the fair value of the consideration that was given. So I think I definitely would support view B in that regard. Just to refer back, say, to the previous comment I made, is that I guess this is not addressing the situation where the acquisition was actually the net assets in intermediate parents' separates, because I suppose we would then revert back to the discussion we were having just now around, do you use book values or do you use fair values to account for that transaction, whereas this transaction here in intermediate parents' separates is the acquisition of shares and not the actual underlying net assets. So I do think we need to take cognizance of the fact that there could be two different types of transactions in the separate financial statements.
Yeah, we actually had a very similar issue at the Interpretations Committee, and I didn't want to bring this up because it just makes this all more complicated, but actually, right now, the Interpretations Committee's view is that if it's not in the scope of IFRS 3, and it is an acquisition for equity, it's in the scope of IFRS 2. So it's a share-based payment, which is at the fair value of what was given up or what was received. So, Domingo, did you want to come? Anybody else on this one? Professor?
As I said before, we in Brazil were doing the folly. We were recognizing the assets in the company that was purchasing, just using the fair value. of the consideration given. What we were not doing is to recognize the profit in the seller. We are deferring the profit, but we were, and now the same, okay? So that's what we are doing in Brazil. We are recognizing using the fair value of the consideration given. The problem is to recognize or not to recognize profit in the seller.
What do you do with it? Just a hanging credit?
Profit to be realized in the non-current liability.
It's not a liability, though.
Yes, we know that.
It's a deferred income. And
deferred income, like deferred
don't
income.
Ask why? Because you don't truly believe in this income, right? Is that why you follow that? That's why I like, we follow the agreement of the group, but we have a discussion on issue. So view A, in it would be my preference, but we don't assess the concept of economic substance. I don't care. It is a common control. It's book value all of the time. So it's my personal view.
Okay, let's go back to the fives then and keep moving. Let's skip 5.4 because the committee had no choice. And I guess we'd skip 5.5 too. That's a heck of a way to make an efficient meeting. You just leave parts out. Okay, press on.
Okay, we are almost finished. This is last topic. The last topic is distinct features of UCC transitions in Korea. You know the conglomerate owns a variety of interrelated enterprises in many different markets through diversification, which are not subject to relevant issues in terms of production nature. They appear to be independent of each other, but in substance, they form a group of entities where the entities are controlled in a consistent manner via equity ownership or common management among the affiliated entities. The prime examples are Samsung Group or LG Group in Korea. These conglomerates have contributed greatly to the economic development of Korea and are still an important part of Korea's economy. Most of these corporate groups are entities under common control of an individual, and thus, transactions among affiliated entities within a corporate group are likely to be UCC transactions. Corporate groups in Korea have two characteristics due to the market and regulatory environment unique in Korea. First, for listed companies which are required to apply IFRS in Korea, non-controlling interest is greater than controlling interest. This is due to the unique ownership structure of conglomerates and having subsidiaries listed as a means of raising capital. According to the data published by the Fair Trade Commission of Korea at the end of 2011, an average percentage of interest that a general holding company owns in a listed subsidiary is 41.9%. It means that the non-controlling interest is over 50%. Let's move to the next page. Even for a financial holding company, each average percentage of interest in a listed subsidiary stands at only 45.1%. According to the tables on the slide, the percentage of interest in subsidiaries owned by holding companies did not exceed 50% for the last 8 years, showing a stable trend like this. Second, in Korea, there are many listed intermediate parent companies or listed subsidiaries. And thus, there exist many stakeholders in the intermediate parent company or listed subsidiary. The table on the slide shows current status of major corporate groups as of June 2012. According to this, Samsung Group has 17 listed intermediate parent companies or listed subsidiaries. And Hyundai Motor Group has 10, and SK Group has 18. Those listed companies are usually the main driving force of each corporate group, and significant not only in terms of quantity but of quality, as indicated by the asset size, sales amount, or net profit. In addition, many listed companies issue convertible bonds or issue public offering bonds in the domestic and overseas market. It means that there are a variety of users of financial statements, such as creditors and potential holders of voting rights. Therefore, we conclude that conglomerates have a significantly high ratio of external stakeholders and other non-controlling interests due to the structure of governments and market environment in Korea. Consequently, a great percentage of UCC transactions in Korea will fall into example 2 in page 25 of this presentation. That is, example 1 is hardly found in a listed company subject to application of IFRS in Korea. The controlling entity's interest in the corporate group in Korea is usually less than 50% roughly because of two reasons. That's clear. First is consolidation under local GAAP before IFRS adoption. When determining the scope of consolidation under Korean local GAAP prior to the IFRS adoption, an entity is considered to control an investee company and thus is included within the scope of consolidation when the entity owns more than 30% and is the largest shareholder of the investing company. That is, since an entity can control an investing company when it owns more than 30% of the investing company, there are not many cases where an entity owns more than 50% of a listed company because it would require a considerable amount of money for the acquisition, as the listed company would have a large market capitalization. The second reason is the lack of systems such as mandatory tender offer, as I will call it, MTO. MTO is a rule which requires anyone who acquires control of a listed company by acquiring shares to publicly promote a tender offer on the remaining shares at a price greater than the acquisition price of the controlling interest for a specified time in the stock market. Through this MTO system, indiscreet M&A may be prevented, or control of the existing major shareholders may be protected, and chances for capital gain may be given to minority shareholders. The MTO system is enforced by the applicable law in most European countries, including the UK, Germany, and France, ASEAN countries including China, Hong Kong, Japan, and Singapore, and the US. The acquisition price of controlling interest is greater than current share price in the stock market due to the factors like management premiums. Therefore, when the MTO system is implemented, minority shareholders would utilize this system to sell their interests at the acquisition price of controlling interest. As per the acquirer of the shares, the acquirer would have to acquire a greater number of shares than the percentage of interest necessary for acquiring control. Consequently, the interest owned by the purchaser is likely to be more than 50%. Although Korea had adopted the MTO system in 1997, but it was revoked 1 year after in 1998 as the International Monetary Fund advised Korea to encourage M&A to promote restructuring of Korean companies during the ASEAN financial crisis. The lack of MTO system is one of the reasons why Korean companies' ownership structure generally includes a greater share of non-controlling interest than controlling interest. So, let's discuss the following question.
Okay, this 6.1 is awfully general. Just by a quick cycle of the table, how many of your jurisdictions have a mandatory tender offer structure? India, not in Argentina, not in Indonesia, yes, but not absolutely certain in South Africa. Not in Brazil. Yes, in Mexico. No, in Mexico. China? Not certain. Okay.
Regarding this issue, we want to introduce you the situation in China.
首先呢，中国企业股权结构的总体情况上来看。
In the structure of the share of the Chinese enterprises.
目前呢，中国的基本经济制度是公有制经济和非公有制经济并存。
Because actually the China economy is, we have both public sector economy and private sector economy, or state-owned economy and non-state-owned economy.
2011年，公有制经济呢占我国国民生产总值近一半的比例。
In 2011, the state-owned economy occupied almost 50% of our economy.
那么中国公有制经济的股权结构的特征是
？And the characteristic of this state-owned economy is
以国有股或者是国有法人股为主。
The stakeholder could be the government or government legal entities.Or meaning that there's a state-owned company holding stakes.
那么其他法人、机构投资者或者私人投资者的股权比例比较低。
And in this case, these companies, other institution or individuals, stakes are in minority.
而且也比较分散。
And very distributed.
整体而言，就是说，公有制经济的这些企业的股权集中度比较高。
In general term, we can say that the state-owned economies, company, is quite concentrated.
从非公有制经济的股权结构来看
，In other hand, in the structure of shareholders in non-state-owned companies' economy?
股权集中度通常比较高。
The concentration is also high.
股东人数较少。
And few people controlling.
一定程度上呢，呈现为家族化的特点。
In certain terms, we can say like a family enterprises.
那么关于中国的上市公司。
Regarding Chinese listed companies,
相当一部分是从国有企业中分拆上市的。
Some of them are spin off from state-owned companies.
对于上市公司来说，总体而言，股权比较分散。
In terms of listed companies, the stakeholders are quite diversified.
如果是按照韩国的表述的话呢，就是属于控制性权益的比例远低于非控制性权益。
If we can use the Korean case, the controlling rights is less than the non-controlling rights.
此外呢，作为新兴经济体。那么中国市场经济起步相对较晚。
Besides, as an emerging economy like China, we are a little, we started later than the others.
目前正面临着一个资产重组、产业升级的阶段。
We are facing a kind of merge of assets and to go higher for other steps.
上市公司呢，正如前面所提到的，上市公司多数是某些集团公司分拆上市的部分。
So many listed companies are the result of some spin-off from other companies.
因此呢，多数参与合并的上市公司在合并前后均受统一控制。
So many companies who go to merge is all controlled by a kind of other mother company.Ultimate companies.
属于企业集团内部资源的整合。
We can consider like a merge of resources from a big company, big enterprise.
合并对价不是双方讨价还价的结果。
And the merge price is not a
consideration.
Okay, it's not the consideration is not the result of a deal.
不代表公允价值。
It doesn't represent the fair value.
因此，采用购买法可能会削弱会计信息与现实的相关性。
购买法 cost.
Acquisition.
Yeah. So if we adopt acquisition methods, may not be applied and represent the reality.
不利于利益相关方充分掌握企业的财务状况和经营成果。
It won't help the parties to have the result.
Stakeholders.
Yeah. Won't help the party, the stakeholders to control to have the result of this merge. Yeah.
那么中国现在的这个融资和监管相当大的这个程度上呢，是依赖于以会计利润为基础的会计信息。
So, nowadays in China, the financing and the regulations is depends on the accounting statements.
上市公司的融资能力、融资成本以及上市资格的维护。
It's depending on the profit of the companies and the listed companies' financing.
很大程度上取决于他们对外报告的账面利润。
Mostly depends on what they postpone, what they press to the public.
那么在这样特有的环境下，购买法和这个账面价值法的选择具有很明显的会计后果和经济后果。
So in this environment, the acquisition methods and the
账面法
Yeah, the acquisition value methods and the book value methods can differ a lot.
关系到企业自身的可持续发展。
It will affect the development of this enterprise.
因此呢，不能简单的以股权结构为判断标准。
So that's why we think that we cannot simply measure using a structure of the stakeholders.
对对对，同一控制下的企业合并采用公买法，就不能
单一。To the UCC enterprises.
The thing that I would like to know is whether China has mandatory tender offer system or not. Yeah, can you ask the question?
What kind of system?
Mandatory tender offer system.
咱们都有这种吗 ？Mandatory tender system， 就是 mandatory 应该是强制的。Can you explain that? Well.
Yeah, I think if I can explain, in some jurisdictions, if I acquire more than a certain percentage of the outstanding shares, I am then required by law to offer to acquire all the rest. And so that's called a mandatory tender offer. So it's...And I think most of the jurisdictions around the table have that system. Mm-hmm. I think if y'all don't know, that's fine. Mm-hmm. We can, perhaps you can tell us later.
Okay.
I think if we can go back to the questions, Korea is the lowest threshold I have ever seen.For consolidations, with I believe your rule used to be 30%, and that's still practice. I've never seen any other jurisdiction where they routinely consolidated at that low a percentage. Professor?
We had some examples in the past, not as an average of the market.
Yeah.
Because we had permission of having only 1/3 of the total number of shares with the right to vote. So it was easy to reach that situation.
6.2 would be, I think, very difficult for anybody to answer. And we've had a lot of conversations around it in different jurisdictions here at the table. Are there any other comments or observations that people would like to make of perhaps subjects that we should have covered that we didn't? Felipe?
I found all this discussion very interesting, and very illustrative. I only have one concern that sometimes in the discussions we were inclined to establish rules instead of principles.And the risk is to end with a standard with so many rules. And the idea is to have principles. It's just something I feel as a risk.
Point taken. Good point.
Thanks, Wayne. Maybe just a comment that even if we do decide that, you know, IFRS 3 fair value is the right approach, something which probably needs to be thought of a little bit more would be identifying the acquirer. And is it necessarily just, you know, the legal acquirer is your accounting acquirer? Or do you end up potentially with some form of reverse acquisition accounting? Yes. So, you know, I just think that that's something which needs to be considered if you are going to apply IFRS 3.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are no questions
about that. Carol. Yeah.One of the considerations which could be given is the fresh start accounting. In a situation when we don't have acquirer or an acquiree, but there are some reorganizations which could give the, which could, and when the fresh start accounting would be the best option, And in the literature, in the IFRS literature, this situation is not considered at all, unfortunately. And it may be a very good option for certain transactions.
Ian and I were chatting at the break. The combination of BHP and Billiton was one where it was ultimately deemed impossible to identify the acquirer, and that would have been a candidate for fresh start accounting, for revaluing both of the companies.
They weren't very keen on that.
Oh, I understand. They weren't. That wasn't their preferred answer. And but in those types of transactions, it certainly ought to be one that we're willing to entertain. Okay. We are an hour ahead of schedule. Unfortunately, once we talk about the administrative issues, I don't believe we will have time to do justice to both of the issues that the Brazilians have brought. And I don't want to shortchange them. So I think we're compelled to meet tomorrow anyway. So my proposal, and I am at your disposition, is that we go to the administrative issues that we have and then adjourn for the day. Do I see any objection to that plan? Okay, well then, that thank you ought to be a thank you from us to you. You have done an outstanding job of keeping us on track and keeping us focused, and the paper was first rate.
And just for the records, you did not go to Guajura, you went to Guarujá.
Okay. All right, we have then the question.
Since I need to come out, as I told you, at 3, and in time to go to the bank, I want to say thank you for all. Thank you very much. Remembering that we will have here in April 18 or 19, the IFS meeting. So some of you probably will come and it will be a very good meeting.
Thank you.
Just announced at the conference as well.
Yeah, I don't have the precise date. Let me look here.
Just been announced also the IFRS conference in Latin America for just a few minutes ago for April 15 and 16. So for the ones who are coming to attend the IFRS, please take advantage and stay 2 or 3 days more, arriving a little bit earlier, participate in the conference, and then participate 2 days IFRS. Will be a sort of IFRS week in Brazil at that time. So the conference followed by 2 days of IFRS meeting.
Okay.
Right. May I just...
so much for...
May I just ask, what's the way forward now on this?
Well, okay, that's a reasonable question. I thought I heard the vice chairman of the Korean Standards Board offering to make a summary. Pardon me? Not today.
No, not today.
But
tomorrow morning.
Let me suggest this, and we did this once before. I think the only summary that's necessary is to articulate the sense of the table around each of the questions. And we did this when we did fair value, and that would be to then circulate it to all of the delegations present, get their comments on it, and then we will submit it to Alan Teixeira for inclusion in the Common Control project that we're just starting. I see agreement to that proposal. I think that's the best way to do it, rather than just relying on my babbling.
Tomorrow?
No, not tomorrow. Give these guys a break. Okay, now, we need our last meeting. The communique said that Korea would be hosting the next meeting of this group in May, and that Malaysia would be hosting in December. Now, Malaysia isn't at the table today for a variety of reasons, so we'll give them a pass. But we should talk about when in May.
Well, anyway, yeah, as you all know, with we are hosting the fifth EG in May next year, and then we don't have any preference for the dates, so that you could decide dates. Then, according to that, we can arrange everything.
From a common sense standpoint, I think the toughest agenda is of the ISB itself, because they have definite weeks of meeting, which we should definitely avoid. Okay. So I think unless anybody has a different view, we should defer to them the selection of specific dates.
Well, and I'm just looking at the May calendar.
If you allow me, because we have the Interpretations Committee meeting already booked in May for the 14th and 15th, and then we have a full board week until the 24th. And also, I would put before you to consider that many of you would be probably coming to Brazil to IFES 1 month before. Oh, so I would
as late in May as possible.
Yeah, I would very much suggest as late as possible, the very last week of May or the first week of June. I don't know. The very last week start on 27th.
You read my mind.
Yeah, awesome. That's a team word, right?
Yeah. Yeah, may I suggest then that we tentatively identify it as either the week beginning May 27 or the week beginning June 3. And we will ask the Korean board to choose one of those and make the arrangements and tell us as soon as possible.
Wayne, the week beginning 3rd of June is... Policy Forum and AOSSG in Hong Kong.
Oh, okay. So.
So it's I think the last week of May.
It has to be the last week in May. I don't have that one on my calendar. Thank you, Ian. And that will actually work out fairly well because we'll be in Asia already, and many of us have to attend the Policy Forum anyway. So, last week in May, then. Let's all mark our calendars for that.
Which means Monday and Tuesday, right?
Or Tuesday and Wednesday, I don't care.
Okay.
I think whatever days work best for you in making the arrangements.
I'll let you know probably next week.
Okay.
Actually, it might be better later in that week if we're going to stay on.
That's true. So maybe even...
Is it?
Easter isn't that late in May.
Easter? May 30 is what the Catholic world calls Corpus Christi.
We don't have Easter.
May 30. There's a Thursday.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's then...
That week,
later in the week is better than earlier.
Okay.
Corpus Christi is a mandatory holiday of my... Wife is tells me correctly, but
which means you prefer the Thursday and Friday? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Then the tough question is, what are we going to talk about? Okay.
There is an email I sent you with suggestions. Do you have access to emails?
Oh. Let me see if I still have access to emails. Nelson.
I've been too quiet, right?
Okay. Nelson has given us three proposals. One is inflation accounting, popular in this part of the world. as a topic. The second is the true and fair override. I don't know how we'd spend a day on that.
Item one is divided into two items.
Yeah, I see that, but I'm just in general. The third one is the executory contracts issue in effort 12 that we talked about at one of our second day sessions. Again, I think.
And Wayne, just to add, yeah, the subjects we're scheduling for tomorrow might eventually deserve some in-depth discussion at future meetings.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Impairment losses in credit portfolios and complex financial instruments.
Let me propose this. One of our operating procedures, such as they are, was that we ought, each of the delegations ought to consult with their stakeholders as to what the issues are. So let me suggest that we ask you all to do that and to then feed your suggestions into me. And let's set a deadline of 3 weeks from today. Is that enough time?
May I just ask you, you know, there are some projects which are already on your agenda, for example, rate-regulated activities. Now, would you consider taking them or no?
Lease.
You hit on a good one. We've had four meetings now when our subject matter was always forward-looking. And Ian and Amaro might correct me, but I don't think we will have moved far on rate regulated by next May. Our first step in that project is a discussion paper. And so rate regulated would be an ideal candidate. It would fit very well with the way we have done things before. And we could certainly spend a day on rate regulated.
We suggest that, and we would take the sort of responsibility to prepare the basic paper, if that's okay.
Well, let's, I'd love to say yes, but let's go ahead and go through the process and feed your suggestions into me within the next 3 weeks, and then we'll filter them and get back to you. Yes, Ingman?
I would like to have a
明年研究点什么项目呢？就是我想是不是尽量的考虑呢，结合这个国际会计准则理事会的这个议程征询的未来计划来考虑。
How about we consider what will be the future projects from ISSB? We try to match some of their future topics.
结合他的这个计划，我们来研究，可能有针对性一些。According
to their project, we can just focus and support them.
当然，今这个今天的这个议题也实际上是很复杂的，我不知道这一天半搞不搞得完。But
of course, today's issue is quite complicated. I don't know if the only 1.5 days is enough for that or not.
如果还有一些问题，也可以考虑下次也还可以继续研究。另外还有一些，我们看看，就是未来资讯计划里面呢，我们觉得啊，你像这个无形资产的问题。For
next project, we can also think about intangible assets.
就无形资产的研究阶段与开发阶段的区分的这个。
Because that's something difficult to measure in practice.
这个问题呢，涉及的范围比较广。
And it's a broad environment to discuss.
反正谈点看法就行。That's
only my idea.
Okay, well, those are certainly intangibles would be, it's one of my favorite topics, but I wrote a book on it, so.
Yeah. The overall idea that you see for the coming section would be to have a lot of topics or two or three topics. What?
It's always one topic.
Always one topic, one day.
One day, one topic, and my topics for lighter discussions in the floor.
Yeah.
It's 12-hour meeting.
Do you like the approach of have one day, one topic?
Yes. I think this is one of the most successful technical meetings that the IASB has.
One day for,
because of the one day,
one big
topic.
Topic.
Yeah.
And okay, okay.
Okay, so we have a date. We have a deadline for people to get back to me.
It's Christmas Day.
It's Christmas, yes. 3 weeks from now is Christmas.
Oh, you're going to be picky about it. All right. January 2nd.
No, but it's up to 3 weeks. Could be before.
Middle of January 15th. God, I'm hard to get along with. We need to give everybody plenty of time to consult. All right. Tomorrow morning, we will begin with the communique. And then we will move to the two issues that the Brazilians have made for us. Is there anything else for the good of the order? None appearing, we will proceed to close. Thank you very much.
Just maybe logistics. Where
logistics.
The dinner will be.
Oh, yes, the dinner.
The dinner, Hugo.
Details about the dinner.
The dinner is at this restaurant at Renaissance 2 at 7:30 p.m.
The same place we had
the
lunch?
The same place to have lunch.
And I understand you have advanced the coffee break now.
Yes.
So if people want to refresh themselves.
Everybody is invited to the dinner, include the observers.
Including the observers.
Yes.
You're too generous.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Not many observers.
Vamos discutir no CPC sexta-feira, levar esses três assuntos que ele sugeriu e esses dois de amanhã que eu acho que não vai esgotar. E aí espero.
Qual vai ser? Qual é a ideia?
Provisão?
Porque vai ter um exposure draft.
Tem muito mais assunto do que horário.
Sim, sim, mas provisão seria qual?
Não, não, é o seu de amanhã, que está no tópico.
Ah, tá.
Não, amanhã
não,
é
o tópico de amanhã.
PDD.
Ah, então, é isso que eu estou falando. Esse de amanhã não vai dar mais botão.
Ah, é, com
certeza. Tanto esse quanto instrumentos índios. A reunião próxima ficou para a Páscoa, né? É, ele não escolheu o dia. Nossa semana da Páscoa.